You are listening to episode 82 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters, Getting Animated with Jack Brilio and Alex Serra.
Mother.
Barely started and already Skype falls off, boy, has fallen off yet again. Welcome to episode 82 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I'm Paul French, and today I am barbecue boy, because it has been a weekend. Woo! A weekend solid of barbecuing every dinner outside on the back deck. And I was a little worried it wasn't going to happen today. We were worried about some rain, but then inexplicably it all cleared up. So that's me.
That reminds me, I am actually grocery boy today because I went and ran some errands and got some food, yay food. And I went to the grocery store but almost bought nothing that was food. I needed laundry detergent and dishwasher detergent, you know, crap like that. And I needed to check the weather because I remember they were saying that those storms from Tennessee were actually going to try to make their way down here today, tonight. So I need to see what the radar says. And the radar says it's out. it looks like we've got another 2 hours before it starts getting a little janky down here. So,
excellent. We'll know.
You'll know.
We had Scott storms won't. All last night.
Poor Scott won't, but
yeah, Scott will never know now.
Poor Scott. Well, I'm Matt Kramer, and today I am bargain boy because we spent the afternoon at Half Price Books, and I spent far too much money. But the best thing I picked up was a first print hardcover copy of The Shining for $5.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
It even has something written on the first page, like a grandma gave it to like a granddaughter for her birthday. So it's like, happy birthday, love grandma.
Gee, grandma, thanks for scaring the crap out of me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, really. Did it come with two tickets to a ski resort that's closed in the middle of winter? Because
no, but it says also by Stephen King. The also by Stephen King page says Carrie and Salem's Lot, and that's
yes,
it.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. You know you're early on there. And Scott is apparently Skype falls off, boy, and we'll get him back on as soon as
eventually.
As soon as that works out for him. But we do have a couple of guests with us. We have Jack Brilio and Alex Serra. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Do you guys have any fancy Legionnaire names?
Pardon me?
I am today I was Weed Boy or Weed King. I like Weed King because I pluck a lot of weeds today. That was my excitement today, getting rid of dandelion.
You want to come up here? We've got some that need to get pulled.
That's good, Matt. Get our guests to do some do some gardening for you. Oh my!
I guess I'm drawing Squirrel Boy today. So I'm doing an animated storyboard for a show called Scaredy Squirrel.
Oh, right on.
Aww.
That's my day.
Excellent.
And the squirrel looks really scary.
Scary.
Yes, there's a key difference there in phrasing, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
So one of the things that we wanted to talk about first off is we're going to just sort of talk about the cartoon just in sort of general terms. You know, usually we go through sort of a story and everything, but in this case, we'll sort of talk about it in more general terms and just sort of some of the differences between the cartoon and the Legion that we're more familiar with in comics, and then we'll also talk a bit about what it was like working on the Legion in that way, and because I'm sure that there's a whole lot of different rules that you got to follow for doing a licensed property like that. So. Who wants to start off just talking about their first experience with the cartoon?
Jack, you go ahead.
Sure. When when I heard about it, I was really happy because I mean it was the first time. I mean, other than the episode, a couple of episodes here and there from some of the previous DC cartoons, you know, Legion hadn't ever gotten any real time as an animated series. So it was great when I heard the news that that it was coming back. So that it was coming on, I should say. So yeah, I was really excited and you know, sad that it only lasted two seasons, but happy that at least we got two seasons at the same time.
For sure.
You know, for sure. Some really good classic episodes I that I really enjoyed, and others that were, you know, meh, and others overall it was a fun little series, and I liked how different it was, like look wise that the animators took a little bit of a different look to it, and Alex feels the same way of that, but it's kind of neat with the, you know, the big leg, the big, not necessarily legs, but the big feet, that kind of animated style, just kind of little things that just made it a little bit different, right?
And I think that like for Saturn Girl, for instance, the bigger forehead and everything, you know, it was a really different look.
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay, so let's, anyone else want to talk about their first experience with the cartoon? And
I think for me, it was just, I enjoyed it, but just the fact that it was called Superman kind of threw me off.
That did kind of throw me off too. But you know, you gotta deal with legal, you know.
Insert Superboy there, you know.
Anyway. Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. It did seem kind of funny, you know. I mean,
you know, the whole young Superman thing, right? It's like, oh, you mean Superboy?
Yeah. Well, and now think about that though. Is that because we're just used to it as comics fans, where it's like, you know, we're used to the idea of Superboy? I mean, Superboy is normal to us.
I think that was the only reason it bugged me was. It, you know, we read Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes.
Exactly.
It's not a big deal. I don't think it mattered probably to modern day fans. But
I think you're probably right, Alex. It's like, you know, we know it. We know the history of Superboy, right? But like, it's a good sell for those that don't that didn't know the characters. Oh, a young Superman. Okay, yeah, I get that. You know that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I mean the. You know, I mean, my wife looks at you know, when she looked at the show, it was like, okay, it's Superman, and it's, well, sort of, and
I think about the second season, I didn't like that it was the adult Superman.
Well,
it was kind of.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say that I thought that was kind of a cool concept, how he'd grown up between the seasons.
See, I never even noticed that he had. Yeah, I guess, I mean, to be fair, I didn't see as many episodes in the second season as I did in the first.
It would have been interesting if it had done the whole full five seasons, and had they kept doing that, they did a little bit of a jump each time.
Mm-hmm.
Then they could have done a whole bunch of things. Like I was thinking when they did that jump to season two that, oh man, season three, they can do another little jump and do another iteration of the Legion. It'll be cool to see them in different styles, much like we remember the Legion in all their various styles from the 60s to the 70s to the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All the different boots, you know, the different reboots.
So. The boots.
Well, you know, and I mean, I think part of it also, you kind of get that, I don't know, that kind of feel for it where yeah, it was a bit of a jump ahead. But I mean, when you look at like the Justice League cartoon, you know, they kind of, you kind of went from the, what was it, the Justice League cartoon to JLU pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And that was very different in tone as well. Like I say, I mean, my second season knowledge is lean, because I think I saw maybe three or four episodes, and so I don't think I'm as familiar with it. So yeah, like I say, I mean, I didn't even notice that he was older.
I think I think I saw them all, but the odd thing is I think I can only remember like four or five of them.
Yeah, that's kind of my problem too.
Did they run the whole? Did they get to run the whole thing, or did they get pulled out?
They did, but it was extreme. There was a big gap before the last couple episodes aired.
Right. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I didn't even see the last two episodes. Did they defeat the big villain? Does anybody remember?
Yeah, they did. But they defeated the big villain so easily.
Yeah, it was almost like they just, we need to get this taken care of.
Oh, yeah. We're done with this. Let's just, yeah, it was yeah. Just,
and what happened to the Superman from the future?
He stuck around. Oh, did he stick around at the end or not?
I believe he did.
Yeah, I think he did. But let's just call him Mon-El, because that's who he was.
Yeah, that's who he is.
Well, yeah, so they're saying that...
Superman was Mon-El.
That, you know? Season two took place approximately 2 years after the season one finale. And so they said something about the the other Superman was a 41st century Superman, later called Kal-El, cloned using a combination of the original Superman's DNA and kryptonite, making him as powerful as Superman while being invulnerable to green kryptonite. Who does that sound like? Yeah, yeah, you're right. Let's just call him Mon-El.
Yeah, it sounds like someone was born on a Monday.
Yep. You know what I wish they did in the first season? I know they needed probably a core group to, you know, so that the audience can follow them throughout the season. But, you know, the geek in me wanted almost like every episode there'd be like five or six different characters.
Yeah.
Just so you could see the whole, and then they could have used all the characters they had in the intro. Mm-hmm. You know, you could see... like Dream Girl was there and a whole batch of them, Karate Kid, and
I think the big things from that first season were the episodes where you had these group shots, and like, mm-hmm. if you tape the thing, you'd like pause it to go, okay, yeah. who did they throw in the group shots? Like in the, I think there was an episode.
That's when Timberwolf got was doing the oath, wasn't it? And they went around.
Yeah, and they went around. Yeah. And showed the other Legionnaires that were around.
Yeah, and there's Element Lab also, and I think Shrinking Violet.
I was also thinking about the Legion of Substitute Heroes episode.
That was a great episode.
It showed a whole bunch of Legion rejects, and it was neat trying to figure out who they were.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's probably the one I've watched the most.
That was the first one I saw.
Yeah, just absolutely hilarious.
I wonder if they just made a cartoon of the Legion of Substitute Heroes, because that's powerful.
That would have been awesome.
Infectious Lass with her inhaler.
Oh, God. So good. Just so good. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, we got so many of the sort of the little touches with that episode, and that's what I really liked about it, was, you know, there was just so... Oh, hang on, I think he's back. All right. Let's see if we can bring in Skype Falls Off Boy.
Wow, I actually changed my name to Inferno Lad.
Is the fire getting closer?
I don't know, but there's like every fire truck in Atlanta is apparently going by my building right now.
So it really is Hot Atlanta tonight?
It is Hot Atlanta tonight. Someone's cow has knocked over our lantern again.
Oh my. Yeah. So okay, so just looking at some, you know, they had some of the voice talent on the show, and there was some interesting interesting little bits there that I thought. I mean, there's a lot of sort of the people you see in a lot of animation, you know, like the like Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt and like, Adam Wiley seemed to do a lot of voices. He used to be the little kid on Picket Fences.
Okay.
Yeah, so he did the voices of Brainiac 5, Colossal Boy, and I think that was it. But still, that's two characters.
Is that the one? Did he have like a red haired bowl cut or blonde haired bowl cut?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So he did that, of course.
One of my favorite shows, actually. I really enjoyed Picket Fence.
Oh, yeah, it was a great show. And, so he also, also doing voice on it was Will Wheaton, recurred as Cosmic Boy.
Oh,
Damn you, Will Wheaton.
Yeah. Bumper Robinson, who I remember from Night Court, and I think he was also on A Different World at one point. And he was Starboy.
Oh, yeah.
And
where did Starboy appear in the cartoon? I don't think I remember him.
I think he did.
He came in for the first time in the Subs episode. I guess him and Tenzel joined.
Yes. And you gotta love them for putting Tenzel in, because
you know,
that's awesome.
You know, that shows that they're really, you know, hey, that shows that they're really looking out for the fans, you know, because only real Legion fans get Matter Eater Lad.
No kidding.
But so I was just trying to another one that did a lot of voices was Kerry Wahlgren, and God, she's done a lot of. Some of the lead roles, she was Mindy in Bolt. She was Tinkerbell in Neverland.
I love Bolt. That's a great little movie. There you go.
She also did the voice of Baby Donkey Kong.
Well, no one's perfect.
I don't even know what that is.
but on Legion, she did the voices of Saturn Girl, Triplicate Girl, Infectious Lass, Shrinking Violet, and Ayla Rands.
So all the women,
basically. Well, except for Phantom Girl,
like Dream Girl, right?
And Phantom Girl.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you guys started working on the Legion comic, did they give you like a series bible to make sure you were sort of staying on the on the straight and narrow with the cartoon?
I remember seeing something. Yeah. It was the bible. Yeah. We've gotten. You got some model sheets, I think, Alex, didn't you?
Yeah, I got some model sheets. Okay. Not everybody, though.
So it was mainly like sort of a style guide kind of thing.
Yeah, what I do remember is when they switched the show to season two, I remember getting the rough as they were doing them.
Right.
A handful of them for the new characters and stuff like that. But I don't know if we ever used a lot of that stuff.
Right.
I think a lot of that was just like an introductory material at the beginning to kind of, because I mean it was still relatively new when the comic had started, right? So it was good information to have. I know Alex, do you remember also Boris had gotten us a press kit of material that we were able to look at. This was. You know, it had I think the first couple of episodes. This was before, it had started, or it was around the same time. And you know, it had some animated animation shots and that sort of thing in it too. But it was I remember we used that at the beginning to prep for our stories, anyways, that we did.
Hmm. Right. So now what about, did they put any limits, sort of, you know, here's some things that you can do, here's some things that you can't do?
It was fairly relaxed, as I recall. I mean, I think it was just a lot of common sense stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
kill the core characters.
I'm trying to think if there was ever an idea that the Jack or Jay Torres had that was shot down. I mean, Jay would have to speak for himself, but I think for
first season, I think I can't speak for Jay, but for first season, I think what a lot of us did was pitch a lot of the stuff that we knew about from the episodes we saw, right? You know, like, so my first story was Triplicate Girl and Bouncing Boy's first date, and I had Starfinger as the villain there, and
yeah.
I knew Starfinger was one of the villains there, so I was using existing characters. So I think during the first season, a lot of it was reuse of, you know, just what was in the animated cartoon, and just doing comic book stories of those characters.
Right.
I seem to recall once we hit season two, though, that there was a little bit more freedom. And I think that's where Jay went with some of his stuff, being able to go do a few different things. And where I started my stories, never got... I got to plant seeds for future stories, but never got to tell them. But
right.
we were given a little more free rein to kind of continue with not just the existing characters, but if we wanted to create any new characters or introduce any new Legionnaires. I know what Jay did is Jay introduced a lot of DCU concepts into the Legion stories, right? So Alex, one of your first stories was the Teen Lantern story, right?
Yeah, there was Teen Lantern. There was a Martian Manhunter reference.
Booster Gold a little later.
Booster Gold, yep.
Yeah.
Well, that was Impulse. I think that was the last one I was involved with.
Yeah. Oh. Hmm. So, yeah, okay. By the second season, we had a little more liberty, but then also it was we had. The book was ending, so when the cartoon was ending, so once we knew that, we also had a little bit more more range.
Do you think part of the reason that there was a bit more leeway is because it was such a like they were really building an arc on the show, so it was kind of like, well, you know, you don't need to go along with that because you can't.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I only did a few Teen Titans Go stories, so it's the only thing I would have to compare it to in terms of what it's like to work on the DC merchandise stuff.
Yeah.
But I think Teen Titans, the show, was done by then, so even that's not a really good comparison. But it was pretty free. I don't recall too many problems. And our editor, maybe she took care of all that on her end, but and then just didn't tell us about it. But it seemed like she was open to a lot of ideas.
Yeah. Was it Jan Jones that you guys were working with? Or was she already gone by then?
Yeah, no. Her name just disappeared.
Janine Schaefer.
Janine Schaefer. Janine Schaefer.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, no, Jan was still...
You said Jan Jones, it was like, well, wait, what?
Now,
actually, it was kind of funny the way we got that. We got on that was when the cartoon was announced, we assumed there was going to be a comic book based on the show. So the one editor that we were friendly with was Tom Palmer, who was editing Teen Titans Go. So I emailed him to say, hey, if that comic happens, I'd love to do it. You know, both Jack and I would love to be part of that. And he said he hadn't heard anything about it. Then I did a Teen Titans Go, and oddly enough, the book was being done a little bit later, but in another office. And then it was handed to Janine Schaefer, who shares an office with him. And so when he found out about it, he emailed me, and I went in for an interview and managed to get on. So it was just so, had I not asked just out of the blue, I doubt he would ever have emailed me to tell me about it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think it was definitely good timing. Yeah, with Janine, did a few Legion stories. I also she edited Scooby-Doo, so I did a few Scooby-Doo stories.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, those were fun. It was fun telling the Scooby-Doo stories. Also, didn't have, like Alex was saying about dealing with licensed products. It was a pretty good experience. I was expecting lots of limitations,
right,
and lots of rewrites or. Didn't happen too much. I don't know. It was very, very light, so it was good.
Well, that is good.
Totally. Yeah. No, it's, you know, because you always wonder, because, you hear stories about sort of, and I mean, this goes back a much longer time ago, but you used to hear about people saying, oh, yeah, we couldn't do this because of that, and they wouldn't let us do this, and we wanted to do this, but they wouldn't let us do that, and... you know, licensed properties, it can sort of go either way. And
Well, Jack did a book called Digger for IDW. And
yes.
There was a lot of back and forth for that book.
Yeah, that was my... So what you just talked about, Paul, that's what I went through. Not from the IDW guys. The IDW guys were great. Chris and Benton were awesome. But, they go to Fox or Fox Sports or the people at Fox Sports, and they come back with lots of comments and lots of, so it was back and forth, lots of back and forth. Getting those scripts approved, getting those stories, the artist on the book was always going through some changes as well.
So,
extremes, right?
Well, absolutely. I guess it makes you appreciate the easier situation all the more.
And I mean, Legion, it's too bad we couldn't convince them to continue doing the Legion comic, because we would have had open reign, right? And,
without a doubt.
The cartoon was done with at two seasons. We could have gone where we wanted to, and we had lots of stories we were ready to tell to kind of fill up that universe, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because they were planning a third season, and it was intended to take place 3 years after the end of season two. So it looks like they were doing that jump. What's interesting is that would have made it 5 years later. But they said that so it would have taken place at the end of season two, in which an older Superman would return. And some of the characters they talked about using were Censor. Wildfire. No, just wait. So, Censor, Wildfire, Magnetic Kid, Supergirl, Tellus.
Wow.
Princess Projectra. And Shadowlass. And also, they were going to bring up, they were supposed to be bringing up Block and Dawnstar into more active roles. And Feralad's twin brother was intended to appear. And Kal-El was, Mon-El, was intended to be a regular character, but with a reduced role.
I hadn't heard about that.
So, it is on Wikipedia. So, I mean, take it for take it for what you will. But they, yes, yeah, exactly.
The only problem, when they did the Teen Titans Go cartoon, they were teenagers. They were treated as real teenagers on that show.
Yeah.
And it reached a broad audience. And I think the problem with Legion, it moved away from that really quickly when they got to season two.
Right.
And it sounded like in season three they were going to be young adults.
I think with season two they were trying to follow the Justice League unlimited model, right?
Absolutely.
They were trying to do, and really, I think Teen Titans Go sort of had that in the later seasons as well, but it still managed to keep its sense of fun and managed to keep the characters, entrenched in their teenagehood. You knew that they were still young teens, right?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
They even did the Judas contract.
Yeah. With they left a couple of bits out.
Just a couple.
a pretty good version of it, though.
It really was.
Yeah. It was okay. It just missed the nightgown scene.
Or the cigarettes, right?
Oh my.
That's one of the rules.
Yeah, there you go.
We bring you Jailbait Theater. Thank you.
Oh, yes. All right. We have fought Computo in one, and we now have Scott with us as well.
Hi,
yay, Scotty. Woohoo.
So where were we? We were talking cartoon. That information I had on that third season actually was cited from an interview with James Tucker on CBR. Mm-hmm. So sounds like that it is actual facts.
Legit.
Yeah, exactly. But because let's face it, with this, who would have ever figured that you would go to McDonald's and be able to get a Lightning Lad toy?
Or Validus.
Yeah, serious.
Well, they lost the Disney contract. McDonald's did, so. Hey,
true.
I never did get all of them. I think I got four or five of them. But
I just have the Validus.
Yeah, I think I only have three of them.
Yeah, they had a Validus figure. I mean, someone said, hey, let's get the guy with the exposed brain. Let's put that out as a kid's toy.
because boys love that stuff. Come on.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they had the ones they had were Superman, Timberwolf, Lightning Lad, Mano, Therok, Brainiac 5, Bouncing Boy, and Validus.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they had that many.
So we got three of the Fatal Five, at least. Apparently, Persuader and Emerald Empress didn't make the cut.
Well, Persuader's got that sharp axe, you know, kids and safety, and, you know. That Emerald, I think, is just going to get, it's just going to get lost. Someone's going to swallow that eyeball. It would have needed
a second accessory.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You know. So, you know, Alex, we already you mentioned about how you weren't crazy about the fact that they referred to him as Superman, and we talked about that. Now, for me, the sticking point I had was Brainiac 5.
Yeah,
I didn't like
because
the
he was robot-y.
Yeah. I guess it's and that's totally based on my hang-ups of being a Legion reader for years.
Right. I like the look of it. I like how he looks. But I agree with you. I didn't like that he was a
especially robotic. In the second season when he went out super robot-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because Jay and I worked on a story. Jay and I worked on a story before we found out that it was going to be canceled, where we would go in depth on the Brainiac 5 side of things and explain and make him human, essentially.
No, really?
So that he was more human than robotic, and we'd explain away a bit, or at least create a new standing order for him in which he was human, but he had the stuff that that he could do these robotic things, which was a robot. So yeah, it's funny that you should say that because I think I felt the same way.
Yeah, it seems to be that's a common one. I remember people mentioning that at the time that the cartoon was on. But on the positive side, I really liked the role they had for Bouncing Boy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did too. I thought he was well handled.
It was nice to see him be sort of brought up front. You know, quite literally in the case of, like, I mean, let's face it, he was basically Tiny from G-Force.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the goggles helped the owl effect a little bit, didn't they?
Hey, what do you guys think of in the second season? I thought there was one fantastic episode, I think, with Lightning Lad and his sister and brother.
That was pretty good.
I liked little Ayla. I like
the two ships are facing off, and the two brothers come together to try to save the sister. I like that episode.
Yeah, that was good. Forgot about that one. Yeah.
Well, see, because they're getting right down to character, right? And I mean, it's. Yeah. I think a lot of those things end up being so plot driven, where it was very much we have to get from A to B, especially in the second season, where it was, we need to service this plot as much as we can, and. And so it was neat to have something that was a pure character moment.
Yeah, I thought that one was, like the overall, whatever they were trying to solve there, I really couldn't care less about, but I did like the moment with the two brothers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Plus, I mean, who can't get enough of the retelling of the origin?
Exactly. See, if we were watching it, we'd have to take a drink, and it's like it's around breakfast time that it was on, so...
Can have a Bloody Mary.
There you go.
Hair of the dog that bit you.
See, up here we would have a Bloody Caesar, so there you go.
I'm more of a mimosa kind of breakfast guy. Yeah,
seriously. Mm. Champagne and orange juice, baby.
There you go. Mm. There you go.
You're right about Bouncing Boy. At least Bouncing Boy character-wise had a bit of an arc, right?
Yeah. And I guess it's just that, let's face it, when Paul Levitz started on the Legion comic, what was like one of the first things he did is like, let's get this guy out of here.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it was not just the very first thing. It was on the first page.
Yeah, Chuck wasn't long for the Levitt's run, but he brought him back occasionally when needed.
Absolutely. And brought him back in some pretty cool roles, including the later in the Baxter series. But I mean, his very first thing was like, let's just clear the board here a little bit, and Chuck was one of the first to go. So it was really cool to see him up front and being an important part of the team. And,
probably also because he would have been fairly easy to animate. That's probably why he was included.
That makes a lot of sense. Powers, yeah. I didn't even think of it that way, but you're right.
Oh, yeah. When the show was announced, I guessed he would be one of them.
Oh, okay.
I was surprised, actually, Shadowlaugh wasn't there because that would have.
Yeah, I was upset about Shady not being included at all as well. I was like, come on, she's kind of cool looking.
Yeah,
she's blue.
It would have been so easy when she uses her powers and the screen goes black.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Done.
And hey, she could have had a relationship with Kal-El.
Exactly. Yeah.
She could have been the hot babe at the tryouts, so Kal-El goes, well, you know, it's like, ah, there you go.
Hey now.
But I did like the way they took the triplicate girl to duo damsel approach. They didn't kill her. They just misplaced her or whatever. So that was kind of nice.
For a season anyways, right? From the beginning.
Yeah, for a season.
Yeah, that was a good arc. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, that death, yeah, because
death without death, you know, that was kind of cool. So,
well, it's just like when we talked about them doing on Teen Titans, you know, the whole idea of the Judas contract. It's like, but we're gonna end it a little bit differently.
But then the Sun Eater story basically ended the same way.
Yeah, and that wasn't, you know, I mean, the DVD I picked up was the one with the subs episode and the Sun Eater as well, and also of course had the Mixius Pidalic episode, or sorry, Zix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mixius Pidalic. Yeah.
It's an analog. It's okay. We've been through this. We know about our alternate Earths. It's cool.
I thought he was Legion Knight.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
See, that's why I think DC fans are a little more resilient than the Marvel fans in this regard. It's like, oh, we've been through so many reboots at this point. This is nothing. Okay, fine. Bouncy Boy has goggles. Sounds good to me, you know.
Whatever. At least he's got. At least in this one, he's got powers.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the architect. Okay.
See, no one really wanted to deal with Bouncing Boy. Poor Chuck.
Poor Chuck. And he didn't even make it into the three boot, so, you know, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
The girl was there, but not a Chuck to be found. Wow.
I think Bouncing Boy was in one of my first Legion stories. Like, I mean, one of the first stories I remember reading was the wedding issue, right?
Right.
Oh, cool.
Dave Cossum. Or just double page splash, and, you know, everything.
The infamous double page splash.
Yes.
Is that the one Dave Cossum thought over and left?
What was that story?
Say again, Alex.
Is the double page spread you mentioned with like Bouncing Boy's wedding? Is that the page that Dave Cockrum fought for? And when he didn't get it, he left. Okay. All right.
Yeah, and that's the one that had like everybody on it.
Okay, I always get that mixed up if that was his or if it was Lightning Lad's wedding.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know which one it is.
I think the Lightning Lad wedding was Grell.
That was Grell, yeah. That was
okay. Okay, and that was the one that was in the tabloid.
Yes, that damn tabloid.
I have it for a steal, so shut it.
I have it in the basement.
I have it as well.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that the Dave Cocker one had, I remember one thing that stood out and kind of confused me as a kid, I guess, when I read it, was Martian Manhunter was in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, it was one of those things where, I mean, that was kind of the thing at the time, right? Like, you think only a couple of years difference from when they had, or only a few years off from when they did the Superman versus Muhammad Ali cover, right? where it was, you know, again, let's see how many people we can chuck into this cover.
I remember being a kid and reading that, where they listed everybody.
Yeah.
I didn't know half of them. I didn't even have cable TV back then. I didn't
Oh man. Yeah. It's kind of neat stuff. It's kind of neat stuff. So hey, we've mentioned a couple of Legion artists. So let's go around. I just feel like, you know, we've talked a bit about the cartoon, and we're going to get to talking about some of your creator owned stuff as well. And but what I also want to get into is just favorite Legion artists. If you had to pick one. And Alex, you're the published artist in the room, so you get to start.
Oh man, that's
no pressure.
I'm gonna. It's not that he draws better than anybody else, or that I like his art better, but I'm gonna pick Mike Grell, because that's when I was really young. Those are the books I got.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, Jack.
That's hard to pick one. I always thought Pat Broderick was unheralded as an artist. I mean, his run wasn't that long, but
yeah.
I really like Pat Broderick's stuff. And you know, how many issues did he do?
I remember being three or four. When he left, and but I like Giffen a lot, so it was all right.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that I didn't mind what came afterwards, but I remember liking Giffen stuff as well, obviously,
yeah.
In that classic run. But Pat Broderick, and then, you know, even later, there's so many good artists that have done Legion, right?
I mean, oh yeah.
I'll just name some of the I'll name some unheralded ones just because, you know.
Nice.
Just to do that. I remember being really blown away by Jason Pearson's stuff in the 5 years.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that's when Giffen's art wasn't, you know, it had changed considerably. Let's say by that time, right? So, Jason Pearson was a nice wealth of change. I just loved the dynamic. It's so dynamic, and but still, you know. It was cartoony, but it wasn't. You know what I mean?
Totally. And he'd been doing stuff sort of like that. Like he'd been doing stuff similar to that on Hero Alliance, but then when he went over to Legion, he took it just steps further, and it was just incredible.
Yeah. So, there's so many guys that have done runs on that. Those characters. Those are a couple anyway.
Cool. Okay, Darren.
Yes.
Your turn.
Oh, my turn. Oh, well, Steve Lytle.
Oh, yeah.
I loved his art, and I loved his covers. That's an easy choice for me, but there are very few Legion artists I've not liked, mm-hmm. to be very honest with you. I mean, everyone's got their own style.
Yeah.
And as I've matured as a comic reader, I appreciate Giffen's 5 years later work a little more than I did at the time when it came out, because I was like, I can't see these people. It's all dark. You know?
How is their forehead in light, but the rest of their face is in shadow?
Really read the dialogue carefully to know who's talking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it strained my Whittlequanium. but I'm really excited about, Yildiray.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Stuff. I mean, I'm really excited to look at his stuff. I mean, I have a soft spot for Gorilla and Cockrum and Giffen, obviously, and LaRock. I think he doesn't get enough credit for, you know, carrying the Baxter through most of it. So,
definitely.
You know, there's a lot of Legion artists out there I love.
And didn't LaRock for a while? Wasn't LaRock for a while doing Flash at the same time as Legion?
I forget if he was doing Flash at the same time or not.
I don't think so.
I don't think they were doing it if he was doing it at the same time. I do think that LaRock's. I thought thought he was much more refined than Flash. I think Flash was afterwards, though.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, that was probably more sort of very late 80s to, you know what? It was probably after, yeah, it was probably after Giffen had come back. It was after Giffen had come back, right? So
he was doing Flash with William Meisner Loebs and Mark Waid afterwards too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you're right. It was probably after. Yeah, because I was gonna say, you know, that really, you know, for a guy to be doing a team book and the Flash, that is the definition of super speed.
What about Chris Sprouse?
Oh yeah,
Chris Sprouse. I was gonna mention him.
Good call. Chris Sprouse he'd be on my list for sure.
Yeah.
Chris Sprouse was awesome.
So Matt, you were gonna say Chris Sprouse?
Yeah, I was gonna say it's a toss up for me either between LaRocque or Chris Sprouse, because LaRocque was the artist on the book when I first started mm-hmm. reading it. So he's the one that I always go back to compare against in my head.
Yeah.
And Sprouse, I mean, just his design sense and mm-hmm. the fact that he drew teenagers that looked like they were teenagers and not small adults.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And you know, I mean, I thought that one of the things with LaRocque was that you did have that like they seemed taller to me. They just I don't know what it was. They seemed a bit leaner, and it was just the way he designed them. And I guess it was also, you know, just coming off. Did he come off right? Come in right after Lytle?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, maybe that was part of it as well. Scott, how about you?
I'm looking at an issue here. I'm gonna go with this guy. It's Alex Serra. He's relatively new, I think, but
nice. There we go.
Awesome. He was awesome.
More free art for you, Scott.
Well played, sir.
Someone's got a little brown to go with their orange theme tonight. Yes, indeed.
Hey, I know I've got.
Though. I was actually sitting here looking at it because I have the page that Alex gave us and the issue that page is in.
And I've very got cool.
Side by each over beside my desk here, so I was actually.
I framed at mine. Woohoo!
Yeah,
I came home with all that art from the Super Show, and I spent $150 getting it all framed.
Oh God! Here's the best part because I've got the Legion poster framed, and that's going in our rec room. And it's very neat. So I mean, and I know we were showing it off on the forum to everyone, but everyone was pretty jazzed about it. I mean, it's just so neat. Yeah.
And Jason Moe was selling small versions of them at C2E2, but I never got a chance to pick one up. Probably a little smaller than 8x10.
Smaller? Really?
Yeah. They were... But I just never got around to getting them up because. Yeah.
Well, you have one, Matt. I just haven't had a chance to ship it to you, so I'm just...
Yeah, that's what I... That's what kept me from getting it.
Yeah, no, yeah.
It's not his.
Nice.
I'm sure his that size is easier to lug around than the size I make.
Well, absolutely, absolutely.
We need to keep it as a prize.
I don't think he can hear you, Darren.
I'm whispering so he won't pay attention.
For me, it's so easy to go with Giffen, and so I'm not going to let myself go there because that's all, you know, and in any iteration, even when his, you know, although I didn't dig on it when he changed during the Omen storyline, and to be fair, I was 12.
Yeah.
But I just didn't like that as much, but I didn't mind it so much on the 5 year later story. And when we were revisiting that stuff a couple of months ago, I found I was appreciating it even more. And but you know, Giffen's too easy for me to go to, so I'm gonna go with Stuart Immonen.
Mm.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because you know, when he came on to Legion, I think he came on right after Pearson. And some of those stories were a fairly dark time for the Legion.
Ooh, yeah.
Because that's when we started getting into
the Legion on the Run stuff.
Green Dragon and yeah. Five and oh man, there was some rough stuff going on at that point.
Changing costumes, yeah, I'm not, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I tell you, his artwork, it made that stuff shine. I mean, it's one of those things where he was able to save it somewhat, and it was his sense of design, like when Bion first attacked. And I think that's where he picked up right from Pearson, because Pearson designed Bion. That was definitely a Pearson design. Because I just remember that first cover with him on it was, and it was definitely a Jason Pearson drawing it. But he had such a fluidity to his line, mm-hmm. and now he's always very quick to credit Ron Boyd with that. But to be fair, you know. You would also see it at the time when he started working on Superman, and I can't remember the name of the inker that he was working with on Superman, but it wasn't
Wade von Grauberger, maybe.
I don't know if it was him at that point, but this was a bit earlier, and it was I don't know, Jose something, and. Anyway, it was a different inker at any rate, and he still had that same fluidity. Where a lot of people would be more angular, he had a more rounded line, and it just seemed it seemed a lot more lifelike to me. And because I guess at the time I was more into that more detailed approach, right? And so he kind of had a couple of ways with that. You had the Neil Adams method where it was a little bit more angular. And that sort of thing, but he really kind of rounded those edges a bit, and to me it had a real depth to it. So there we go.
I would like to see him. His style is a little more refined now as well. Like I'm remembering like stuff he did for Ultimate Spider-Man and New Avengers. It'd be interesting to see how he would draw the Legion today.
Well, absolutely, and. Because
that was really fun for him, right? I think.
Yeah, well, I think that was where he got his start, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you know when you think of it that way, I mean that you know that stuff from very early in his career, and I think in his his book, The 50 Reasons to Stop Sketching at Conventions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things he has in there is a thing where someone asks him for a Legion sketch, and he's like, you know, do you have any reference? And he says, because it's been a real long time since I've drawn those characters, and so it's kind of intimidated me from asking him for a Legion sketch.
That's why I always carry around my who's who.
Absolutely, absolutely. There you go.
We have to talk about Perez though, don't we? I mean.
Oh yeah,
Lord. Yeah.
The man can draw everything, so you know.
But more for the covers he did, was that in the late 80s?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah.
I would have loved to have seen a young George Perez tackle interiors too. Eh? That would have been awesome.
Oh, totally. Especially at that time, right? I mean, it was because he was doing covers during the Reflecto saga.
Yeah,
and
the thingy,
and while I will go on record as saying I really enjoyed a lot of what Jimmy Janes did on the Legion, you know, through the I think he also did the art on the Secrets of the Legion series, and he certainly did the Reflecto story, and until he stopped suddenly, and we got the Ditko issue.
Dr. Mann.
Oh, I didn't even remember the Ditko issue.
Oh yeah. Phantom Girl, Ultra Boy story, right? The
Space Pirate. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so you had, but you had, you know, this thing, because that was the issue where Superboy was coming, was rejoining them for a time, and so you had that fantastic cover. That Perez did that welcomed Superboy back into the fold, mm-hmm. and so I was like, oh, look at the art on this cover, this is fantastic, and I opened it up, and to be fair, you know, I don't think Ditko overall would have been my cup of tea at 12 years old, but or 11 years old at the time, but you know that was not Ditko at his finest.
No.
You know, and that was Ditko where it was like, yeah, well, you know, that. Did the check clear? Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I would have loved to see Perez do the art on the Legion JLA JSA crossover.
Because
that was just before he came on, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that would have still been Dick Dillon, right?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah, I think Rich Buckler did some of those covers, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was was in the 140s, 150s, wasn't it? Something
I
just
remember. Weren't they like sort of like Wildfire was blasting
148.
Superman, and then Superman was grabbing a Legion, and then it just went around in a circle. They were all beating each other up or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it had Mordru. It had those three demons.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Abnegazar, Wrath, and Ghast.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly
the story. I don't remember the story, but I'm wondering, did they have to split up into different teams?
Oh, yeah, of course they did.
Yeah.
It's the challenge.
It's what they do.
Yeah, that's what they do.
That's what those crossovers were all about. Yeah. when you say about the Mordru thing, that's definitely why we ended up with Mordru in that Challenge of the Superheroes on, why there was a live-action Mordru.
It's Mordru.
Yeah. That's the only reason you got Jet Ski Mordru.
Should we do that? Next April Fools, we should do the Challenge of the Super Friends sing along or whatever. No? Okay.
You can't give away April Fools' joke before April Fools, Darren.
Well, now I've assured that we're never going to do it, so yay, I've saved the universe.
Yeah, someone should do a Suicide Squad podcast.
No!
Oh my! Joke, so guys,
never gonna die. It's freaking May. Let it go.
So, Jack, Alex, you guys have a trade. Is it coming out or is it out yet?
It's coming out. It hasn't. No, it didn't come out this week. So we expect it'll be out in the next week or two. It's coming out from Marcosia. It's a reissue of a book we did a few years back. First time at the collection.
Yeah.
Called Growing Up Enchanted. And it's a fantasy adventure story, an all ages story, and we're really excited that it's back.
I plan on picking a copy up for our friend's 5-year-old daughter.
Cool. That's awesome. We're really excited that that's coming back, and we're actually Alex is started working on some pages for the next trade we intend to do. So we do intend to tell more stories from Oleana and the gang. So
Cool.
So excited to get back to those characters. It's one of those things, I think when Alex started drawing it again, and I know when I started writing it again, it was kind of like, yeah, you can go home again. It was nice going back to the characters. And I had a number of stories already really, roughly plotted out the way I knew where I was going with it. So it's a lot of fun.
Now, how long had it been since you'd been with those characters?
So we did it when Alex was 2003, right? So it's probably been about 5 years, right?
Yeah,
5 years.
I gotta admit, I just started. All I did was a cover, I think, last year for the trade.
Yeah.
But I started drawing the interiors, and I was genuinely happy to do it. It felt really, really good. So. And then I had to go back to storyboarding, and you're like, oh.
there's something about drawing something you designed, though, right? I mean, it's
there's this freedom where it's up to you to decide what's right and what's wrong, and where you're off model and where you should go, and so it's very relaxing to do it, and
right.
Time just drifts by. And when you're doing a board, when you're doing stuff for like BC or something, you there's always that voice in the back of your head, like, is this what they want? Is this what they want?
Right.
And it's hard to let that go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And when that goes away, it's when you're doing work for clients, it's almost worse because you've reached that point where it's not even a challenge anymore.
Mm. Right.
But it's not yours. It's still not yours. And you're just doing what they ask you to do. So I think that's what I like about this book. So when Jack and I did the Legion book together, I mean, we got to sit and talk about it and, you know, go over the script and really, and that's a lot of fun. It really felt, you know, the creative process
felt
was there and that we can do what we wanted to do. And I really enjoyed that one.
Totally. I mean, totally. The experience we had doing issue 8 of the Legion together, and then with, you know, I think with issue 14 that I did, the next story that I did for Legion, I didn't even talk to the artist. So it was such a different experience, right?
Right.
I handed the script, and it was like, I didn't say boo to the artist. So it was like, you know, I was going to see it when I see it, and, you know, I was hoping for the best sort of thing, right?
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Different experience. And so being able to go back to our own characters not looking for, validation from people you're doing it for, right? So you're doing it for yourself. It's to create our own book. It's our own characters. It's nice again. And no, it's a fun story. I mean, it's, 5-year-olds will enjoy it, but I think you guys sat down already. I think you guys would have a hoot with it too.
What I've read of it, I really enjoyed. So, I think it's when you say again, it goes back to. I mean, we talked about this when we chatted in Reading. It's you know, you guys do all ages as all ages.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that sense of adventure and that sense of fun, and I think it appeals to anyone. And, you know, it's, you know, Scott said it best at the time. He's like, you know, it's what comics are supposed to be.
So it's like Tiny Titans and it's not dumbed down. It's just good fun.
Very much. I mean, that, you know, I think you guys have done a really good job at creating a world and so, I mean, the world really has a depth to it, and then the characters really support that, and I mean it's really quite amazing, and when you said about how great it is, Alex, getting back to drawing those characters, you know, I was thinking of on the jam piece at the Super Show, and even from across the room you could see them there.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
You know, they really stood out on that piece, and that was kind of neat.
Oh, okay.
Because it was like looking at it, it's like, okay, well, yeah, I know a lot of these characters, but I know those ones.
and actually, because it's been, geez, I guess like that's 5 or 6 years, my art improved a bit too. Just so the look will be just slightly different, but I can't help it because it's just the way I draw now.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it looks more skilled, and now we have. I think we were doing it as monthlies back then, so we only had a certain amount of pages as well. So now there's more freedom, just to do it as, drag out the story as many pages as it needs. You know.
Yeah.
So you're doing this now like as an OGN then.
Yeah, I suppose we could release it digitally. Maybe that'll be something the publisher would want us to do. Once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, because it was written to come out way back when Jack first wrote it. We were still hoping to do it as monthlies.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm treating it as one book, but with a big chapter break.
Yeah.
So there could be looked on as an issue 5. So it might be possible if the publisher thinks it's worthwhile. But
yeah,
we can do that.
And they've been really at the Marcosia has been right at the forefront of getting content out online as well. You know, they've been doing that for a few years now.
Yeah, I mean you can get the original Growing Up Enchanted digitally through Comicsology. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But. Yeah, and they have a lot of their books out there digitally, and you know, it's the future, right? So it's going to be one more venue. I mean,
yeah, and now did did they handle the distribution to Comixology, or were you guys involved in that?
They have.
Yeah.
They look great. I have an iPhone actually, so I bought the issues.
Yeah, and yeah.
It's awesome. It's awesome going panel by panel. It's a totally different experience. So it's really different, right? Especially us, you know, at our ages, reading comics for as long as we have, you know, having kind of tactile sensation of touching these things for years and years, and then reading it on an iPhone or, you know, if you have an iPad or whatever.
It's a really different experience for sure.
Really different experience. So on an iPhone, because it's smaller, the way Comixology does it is it's panel by panel. So it's almost like they're taking screenshots of, and they really have to know the story to create the beats the right way, right? So
yeah.
If you understand what I mean, in that, you know, they've got to break the panels, especially if some of the panels have a lot of word balloons. You know, they focus to the word balloons at the appropriate time so that the beat follows what you would normally have done naturally reading a comic with the page, the entire page before you. So it's a really neat experience.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, especially if things fall outside of that normal sort of grid pattern. You know, like I was looking at the first issue of the Loeb McGinnis Hulk, and you know, there's a few page layouts in there where you know, it kind of confounds the normal direction of things, and so it was really interesting to sort of see how they handled that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I downloaded one of the early Mage stories. Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Panel breakdowns for Mage were all over the place. It worked really well, I thought. It really worked really well as in that kind of format. So yeah, all that to say that, you know, another way to get at the books. The trade though has for Growing Up Enchanted has been rebuttered. So
yeah.
I know Alex and I both said when we saw it lettered, we go, wow, it's like looking at it brand new again. It's just,
I'd
like to give a shout out to Justin Stewart, who did the lettering on the book.
Did a great job.
Yeah, I did it originally because, you know, back then we really couldn't pay to get anybody to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And one thing I'm not is a letterer. But he did a great job, and it looks great.
Well, it's neat because it's funny because, I guess, we never really gave it much thought. I certainly, as a kid reading comics, never really gave much thought to the person who letters the book. But then you realize just how much a difference they make to a page. It's really quite amazing, and it's...
Really, as a kid, I used to keep track of that. I don't know why.
Like, really?
I always knew when Joe Rosen lettered a book, or Tom Orczykowski, or John Costanza.
Nice.
And I would literally open the book and go, yay, Joe Rosen.
Oh, that's so cool.
Just the way he put, where he put the balloons and how he made the balloons.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. Like, I liked him. I liked Tom Orczykowski.
I was the same way. I was the same way, Alex. I knew all the letterers, and I had letterers that I liked and others who were just, you know, right?
And yeah. You'd open the book and you're like, who's this guy? What is this guy doing this book?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I guess it was one of those things. It's one of those things where you always know when it's done, where you never know when it's done right.
Yeah.
But you know when it's done wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I always remember one of the, I think it was one of the Meanwhile columns when Ben Oda died. And they said that he was basically the guy that it was like, you know, if you had a book that needed to be out tomorrow, he was your guy. And so that was probably, he was probably the first letterer that I was aware of.
And he was doing it at a time when it was handwritten too, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, and I'm not sure when the the digital lettering really started. But, you know, I would guess that it probably wasn't much before, at its earliest, it was the early 90s. Because you still see...
Yeah, probably just a few books, too.
What's that?
And probably just a few books.
Yeah. Because you get a lot of, when you see a lot of original art pages from that time, you'll see the paste up with the letters on it.
Yeah. And, I've got a Starman page from 98 hanging over my computer, and it's got the lettering on it.
Cool. Let me ask you this, guys. Would you rather the lettering be pasted on it, or would you rather
no
lettering? You would have it look
like... I've got two pieces hanging above me. One, a page from Agents of Atlas by Leonard Kirk, and then the Starman page. And it's like, I know what's going on the Agents of Atlas page, but I'd love to have the Yellow Claw saying, I never said the fire wouldn't be hot.
So is that because part of it is, you know, I mean, the whole idea of a comic page is that it is that marriage of art and word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I suppose the nostalgia factor, too, when you see the lettering, it brings back more memories. And maybe without the lettering, it you know, something's missing to you know, that kid in you that saw the book.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's interesting. So the new lettering on this is pleasing you, and that's awesome. And so we can be looking at that one anytime now, basically. I know I've got it on order, so I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it was at the printer along over a month ago. So
yeah.
I'm hoping the next, I think we thought it'd be, you know, it could very well be next week or the week after. It's imminent for sure.
Yeah. Amazon shows a release date of March 30th.
Really?
Well, they're late.
Yeah.
What year, Matt? What year?
Oh, Amazon.
I think that's when, it was Marcosio is from the UK as well, right?
So yeah.
That's also where there's a bit of a delay because of the shipments going from the UK to the States.
We've gotten so used to comics that are printed in North America. You know, they all go up to Quebec and then they go back down and then they come back over here for us.
If I can make one more plug. I have a web strip online called Toy Box Turmoil, and that's at toyboxturmoil.com.
Cool. Hmm. Make a note to add that to the show notes.
And actually, that'll probably also be a trade coming up as well eventually, right?
Very cool.
Nice.
So we're doing some creator own stuff, so it's nice to be doing that material again. And with growing up in Chances already, I think I may have mentioned it last time to you, Paul. There's also going to be an iPhone game for growing up in Chances as well. So kind of looking forward to that. That'll be kind of cool. Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So it's Arcosia is really they're trying to expand in a whole bunch of places.
We, yeah.
Need to see it as a game as well.
That's got to be neat. So what about conventions? What do you guys got coming up?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I was gonna say Fan Expo for sure.
Excellent.
And hoping to be able to also go to New York in October.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't think we'll have a booth in New York, but we'll be there. Are any of you guys going to New York?
Doesn't look likely for me, but we'll. But Scott and I will see you at Fan Expo, right, Scott?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we'll. You know, we'll
be away.
Exactly.
Sorry.
and they will. He's actually not allowed within 50 feet of the building. But he's wily.
Ah.
Yeah. So the next two, we didn't go to. It's kind of weird. I'm glad we went to the Reading Con because usually there's the New York Con in April. I guess the Chicago one, C2E2, replaced that one essentially. We didn't go to Chicago, so glad we went to the Reading one. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was good fun. I really enjoyed the atmosphere at the Reading show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, definitely, and next year we're gonna get Matt to go there too.
Yep, we're already making plans.
Oh, heard that before. Good Lord.
The only thing that prevented me this year was time off.
Yeah,
and I don't have any weddings to go to the next April.
Oh wait. Nine months between now and April, a wedding will pop up. It's pretty much guaranteed.
Super show scheduled now.
Oh, that, yeah. Thankfully you said a wedding.
Yeah, I was wondering where you were going with that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, what causes weddings to occur that are like suddenly planned? Gee, I wonder. Hopefully their kids won't be math majors, okay?
Ooh, I bet I know.
Do you?
I got three potential weddings.
Oh. Oh my. Yikes. But yeah, so it sounds like some pretty exciting stuff you guys have coming up though. So
yeah.
So we'll but yeah, we'll definitely see you in Toronto and we're looking forward to that. And
for sure. And one other thing I'd like to mention is something that just came out, I think, this past week was the collection. You know, Alex mentioned it earlier, Digger, The Adventures of Digger and Friends, that the work I did for IDW, the collection of that just came out this past week.
Oh, very cool. My nephew is really enjoying that, so I'll have to check that out. Yeah, because we picked it up for my nephew and I read it first because I have to make sure that it it's all right for the kiddo, and I really enjoyed it, it's lots of fun, and he's really digging it, so ha, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, pardon the
fun. Ba-dum-bum. All right.
I'm
glad to hear it. I haven't gotten a lot of feedback.
No, it was a lot of fun, and it's he's really enjoying it. So it's exactly the kind of thing he enjoys. So it was when Jan saw it, she kind of looked at it and was like, we need to get that for Aiden. This is something he's gonna like. And turns out she was right.
Go Jan.
That's Jan's superpower. Usually, she's right.
Yes, that's that. And my superpower is being wise enough to keep saying that. Yeah, exactly.
You'll have to let us know what you thought of Grown Up Enchanted when the trade comes out.
Yeah, it'll be great to read the whole thing, and for sure. So. Because we're not going to let you go that easily. We already talked about favorite Legion artists. Now here's where the rubber meets the road. Oh my!
So the static meets the podcast.
All right.
Sorry.
That's all. It's all good. It's all good. Okay. If you can pick one Legionnaire to save the world, which one's it going to be?
Brainiac.
No, to save the world.
Well, he blew it up. Probably destroyed it. So,
Brainiac. Fuck.
All right, Jack.
One Legionnaire save the world. I'll sort of Brainiac 5. Ultra Boy.
Yeah. See, he's one that keeps coming up. That's good. Darren?
Oh, easy, White Witch.
Mm.
Make the problem go away. Poof, done. There you go. No must, no fuss, baby.
Oh, man.
Not the Black Witch, the White Witch. I've got to specify.
Don't you mean the Black Witch? Yeah.
No. I'm not trusting her to fix anything just yet. Let's see how that plays out first before I commit to that.
Yeah.
Matt?
Mono. Gotta go with Mono. You know, he can punch the problem and everything will fade to white.
Scott, how about you?
Mono.
Kel-El.
Scott?
Well, I mean, if there's a problem that can't be solved by super karate, I don't want to know about it.
There you go.
Super karate. Name is
Keith. Yes.
How do you solve a problem like Keith Giffen?
Super karate.
I love Darren. I love that you've managed to fold your month of musicals into
you like
this.
That?
That's well done. Well done. Okay, so now it's to me. And see, I'm going to try not to have any duplication. So I'm going to go with Cosmic Boy, because as we all know, he will end up becoming the Time Trapper, of course.
Only in one reality. Come on.
And so he can just go back and change it all so that it works out all right. So, and besides, you know, Cosmic Boy, he knows how to solve every problem.
Mm.
So.
This is true.
He's a bad dresser.
He was at one point.
Alone, it was fabulous.
And that's mainly for the Mike Grell.
Studio 54.
What's that?
Mike Grell gave that outfit to a lot of guys.
Because I could have sworn it turned up a few times as armor, quote unquote, in Warlord.
Yeah.
And you know Yeah, Cosmic Boy didn't get the worst of it as far as some of that stuff goes. I was reading the Warlord Showcase recently, and man, some of those guys got it pretty bad too.
What was that series he did for first? Was that Star Slayer? No, I don't think that's it. It was basically Green Arrow with black hair.
Shaman's Tears?
No, that was his. That was his Image book. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was Star Slayer.
I think it was Star Slayer.
Yeah,
he always designed the same guy over and over.
because when you look at Travis Morgan, let's face it, he started out not looking like Green Arrow, but he looked like him within an issue or two.
Yeah, I bet John Sable first designed had a goatee.
Yeah.
And his editor was like, dude, come on.
Something different.
Like, really?
So that's why he made Shaman's Tears so ugly.
See, I don't remember that one at all. Yeah.
All I remember about it is it was promoted as the world's ugliest superhero.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I seem to remember that one as, like, I think that was when I just sort of fell out of all of the Image stuff. Because I can't believe that if I was following it, like, I know I picked up the one that Jerry Ordway and Al Gordon did, the dude with the starfish.
Wild Star,
that's it, yeah. And but you know, as everybody is well aware, I'm a big Jerry Ordway fan. You know, you could have him, you know, doing a vacuum cleaner manual, and I'm all over that.
Romance. Okay.
Oh, seriously. I make no bones about it.
All Star Squadron, awesome stuff.
Seriously, awesome, right?
And they should get around to showcasing that.
Oh, yeah. They really should. And I wonder if they're getting closer to it, because we are seeing, you know, we're seeing
Except
a lot
in the
more.
80s, yeah.
That said, Suicide Squad recently, the orders have been canceled.
Ah, oh, jeez, again?
Again?
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Gosh darn it, the heck!
And
I think it's money stuff they have to figure out.
Probably. Well, because I think at some point the I guess in the mid to late 70s, that's when the royalty structures changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it changes the way they deal with them. And that's why a lot of the initial showcases all covered stuff from the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you know, then they kind of broke with that with Batman and the Outsiders and with Ambush Bug. And so you've started to get a few more that are sort of later in that, into that.
At least with Ambush Bug, it's all Giffen.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, we've got you for an exclusive. We own you already.
There's a lot of different creators involved with the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Not the first 20 or so, though.
Yeah.
With the characters involved.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point.
The first 24 issues, it's all... Did John Byrne start with Donald and Austin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't think they're... I don't know that they were ever planning to include, like, the Legends stuff, so... Because that was all Byrne.
And the Secret Origins issue.
Oh, right. But no, so and I mean you look at the ones that they did do those sort of later 80s runs, you know, they did Batman and the Outsiders, Booster Gold, but you know, Jurgens is an exclusive as well, and then the Ambush Bug one. So not a lot of the later era stuff. And but all I know is I recently got the Dial H for Hero showcase, so I'm a happy camper.
Yeah.
You know,
yay, happy campers!
Tons of Jim Mooney art in that stuff. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
I want them to trade Amazing Man. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Little Amazing Man.
Actually, I was down in New York and I was talking to one of my friends, and she's a producer for an animation company down there. And she was talking about this one of her friends, and the friend is married to is it Stephen DeStefano?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I turned to her and said, "Amazing Man!" And she's cool. Like, "What's that?" And I was like, "Amazing Man!"
I love Amazing Man. He was so cool.
Oh, great. Absolutely.
I remember selling all my comics, but I kept, well, not all of my comics, but I kept a batch. I sold a lot, and I kept Amazing Man because I thought for some reason it was going to go up in value. I was wrong.
Yeah,
well. Well, it's the old. I'm going to be able to pay my kids way through college with this.
Through my kids, I'll go to Europe with that.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, no man. One has X-Force number one.
Oh, stop.
Exactly. Well, but when you think of that stuff, like with the, because he did Amazing Man, he did he did a lot of the Looney Tunes stuff at the time, if I remember correctly.
I think that's the occasional thing for Johnny DC as well. I think his name pops up every once in a while.
Yeah, and Hero Hotline was another one that he was doing.
Yeah, around the same time, I think. Yeah. Amazing Man, I think, was by far. I love those stories. Those were great.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, it's just fun. It's just lots of fun. Well, that's very cool. So I think we're pretty much ready to wrap up here.
Yay! Let's wrap her on up, Polly.
All right then. So first off, what you need to do is get to your comic store and order your copy of Growing Up Enchanted. You can also head over to toyboxturmoil.com and check out Alex's web strip, and there will be more. There will be more Growing Up Enchanted coming up. And also Digger is going to see a collection from IDW, is it, Jack?
Yeah, IDW, yep.
All right, there we go. So make sure to check those things out. And now we'll wrap our bit up. And so comments, as always, are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can head on over to the forum. That is forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. And you can join in the conversation there. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. We're also on Facebook, and that is Legion of Substitute Podcasters. just do a search from there. It's us. You know it's us. And you can also head on over to the website. That is legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and you can post comments directly on each episode thread. And with that, we all head back into the time bubble and leave the 31st century to return to the 21st century, and we will see you all next week.
Whoopity-doo. Take care, everybody.